You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
It's O-Behave with Arden Moore, the show that teaches you how to have harmony in the household with your pets. Join Arden as she travels coast to coast to help millions better understand why cats and dogs do what they do. Get the latest scoop on famous faces, their perfectly pampered pets, and who's walking who in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails, garner great pet tips, and have a doggone fur-flying fun time. So get ready for the pause and applause as we unleash your O-Behave host, America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome to the O-Behave Show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. Have you ever offered your dog a Puptini or considered buying a $6,000 hypoallergenic cat? Or didn't even think twice about hailing a pet taxi? Do you and your spouse proudly describe yourself as Diddies? Now that stands for Double Income Pampered Pets. Guess what? You're not alone. In fact, we have become a nation that has gone to the dogs and other pets. And here to prove that is our special guest, Michael Schaefer, a former Philadelphia Inquirer reporter out with a new book that unleashes an insightful, investigative take on the paw power. The book is published by Henry Holt & Company, and I think it's aptly called One Nation Underdog, Adventures in the New World of Prozac Popping Puppies, that's a lot of peas, Dog Park Politics, and Organic Pet Food. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my gosh. What a great book. I got to tell you, this weekend, I pawed through the 290 pages of your book, and I found myself laughing at times and gasping at times by your eye-opening observations. And you know what, listeners? You will, too, after we listen to what Michael has to say today. So sit and stay. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Time for a pause. Four furry ones, actually. Sit and stay. O-Behave will be right back.
Hey, ready to take a walk? Not just you, but the whole family. It's the 2009 Whisker Walk, Sunday, June 7th from 11 to 3 at the Lancaster Fairground in Lancaster, Massachusetts. Pet owners and animal lovers walk to lend a paw to benefit the animal shelters and pet charities they love. Come see exhibits, demonstrations, educational programs, special attractions, product giveaways, entertainment, auctions, raffles, food, fun, and things for adults and kids to see, do, and buy, both human and pet-related. Whisker Walk 2009, a fun day for everyone. For more information, log on to whiskerwalk.org.
Passengers, please fasten your seatbelts, put your seatbacks and sleeping pets in their full upright position, and prepare for takeoff.
Pet Life Radio presents Travel Tales, the show where you'll get great travel ideas on perfect places for you and your pet. From Paris to paradise, south of the border to the South Seas, Travel Tales will give you cool tips on fun vacation destinations to travel with your pet, pet-friendly hotels, and advice on how to travel safely and happily with your furry best friends. So, get ready to pack the bags and the bones with your Travel Tales hosts, Susan Sims and Nicholas Veslowski, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. O-Behave is back with more tail-wagging ways to achieve harmony in the household with your pets. Now, back to your fetching host, America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome to the O-Behave Show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. Our guest today is Michael Schaefer, author of the new must-read book called One Nation Underdog. Hey, Michael, glad you're here.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
All right, let's get started. In fact, for you and your wife, Kelty, it seemed like it all started with a runty little St. Bernard pup named Murphy. So take us back to that day, because you were this top hotshot, you know, investigative reporter for the Philly Inquirer, and all of a sudden you guys want this puppy named Murphy. So this is kind of what started you on the path to the book, right?
Right. Yeah, we had, we just bought a house, and we wanted to get a dog, right, which is what everyone wants to do. and we had been, we would take turns kind of playing around on that website, Pet Finder, which lets you search through all of these, you know, the pictures of dogs that are at every shelter in the country, just about. And we would sort of, right, as a joke, email each other cute pictures. And I didn't really know anything about dogs. The only thing I really wanted was to have a dog with a sort of mournful face. I'm not quite sure why. I just sort of liked the idea. Anyway, we saw this picture of Murphy, who was at a shelter not that far from us, a couple hours away. And we said, you know, why don't we go out and see about him? And I remember on the drive out there, us saying to one another, you know, okay, well, we're never going to do this, and we're never going to do that, and we'll never spend a lot of money on veterinary care, and, you know, and he's not going to eat any of this fancy food we read about, because everyone has read all of these stories about allegedly frivolous, spendthrift pet owners who dress their pets up in frou-frou things and all that,
right,
sort of stuff. And we were trying to be very tough, like, you know, we love pets, but we think all this stuff is ridiculous.
That's right. Then, they're animals, for gosh sakes.
Right, exactly. And then we met Murphy, and he came home with us. And, of course, as everyone knows, it always gets a lot more complicated than that after you start making all these rules. And, mm-hmm, you know, a year later, you know, we were the people whose dog was on antidepressants, and we were the people whose dog ate pretty good, healthy pet food. And we didn't really think of ourselves as being spendthrifts or being foolish or materialistic or anything like that, because as people who have pets and love pets know, most of these decisions are actually pretty logical once you think about them. But for our families, they thought it was very, very strange. And at the time, we didn't have any kids. And, mm-hmm, you know, there was a lot of this, boy, you guys need to go get yourself some kids, because you are pouring way too much nurturing energy into that dog of yours. And, you know, and as a newspaper reporter, I started sort of poking around, and because, you know, it had seemed to us that everything we were doing for Murphy was normal. I mean, we were just doing what our friends were doing and what our neighbors who had dogs were doing, and yet our families thought it was quite strange, and our families aren't bad people or anything. They're wonderful people. So to my mind, the only thing that had changed is the definition of normal had changed between when they got into having pets and when we got into having a pet. And I've been a reporter long enough to know that when the definition of normal changes so fast and,
right,
so broadly, that means something kind of interesting is going on, and I wanted to go find out a little bit more about that.
Well, I think you sniff out good stuff like a beagle does a rabbit. So I was at an event this weekend, and I took my two dogs on a trip because I write for a magazine and have to look at all these places that welcome pets. Anyway, every night I curled up with your book, One Nation Under Dog, and my dogs are like looking at me like, why is she like laughing so hard? And this is what I think is funny, is that when you got Murphy, and even though you and Kelty vowed that you weren't going to be one of those people, you still, dished out about $200 at the PetSmart before you even got home?
Before we even got home. And that was sort of basic stuff. He needed a bed, and we thought we would crate train him, so we got a cage and got some leashes and some food. And the thing at the PetSmart, that it was literally like on the side of the highway on the way from the shelter to our house. Our dog had been in this shelter. It was not a very fancy shelter. It was sort of half outdoors. He was a complete mess. He had dreadlocks over about half his body. He stank to high heaven. He was itching in places I didn't even know you could itch. you know, he'd had a pretty rough time in the 18 months of his life before we saw him. He was only 63 pounds, even though he's a St. Bernard, and they're supposed to be, you know, a male can be like 180.
Right.
So we thought, well, this PetSmart has a little grooming place in it. Well, let's get him groomed. And so my wife went over there and said, boy, this dog needs everything. And they said, well, do you have an appointment? And, you know, we were like, no, we don't. And they said, well, you know, we've been booked up for 2 weeks. You got to make appointments way in advance. And that was, you know, this moment that struck me, that I had no idea that getting your pet groomed had become such a basic service that so many people were doing, that you needed an appointment way in advance, even at a sort of mainstream store like PetSmart. I had not having thought about it very much, I had imagined it was just this very fancy service that only, the rich and famous would get. And that was sort of one of those things where it was like, why is that? And that's kind of what I tried to do in my book, was look at this question of how did we become a pampered pet country? By which I don't mean anything bad. I just mean, by the standards of our parents and our grandparents, we are treating our pets in a very lavish way. And, you look at this question of why is grooming become so hugely popular and such a common thing that we're spending $1.2 billion a year on
grooming? Well, even more importantly, I think you pointed out in your book that is a lot of kibble, but that has grown by 50% in just like 4 or 5 years, right? So, what an industry.
The whole size of the pet industry, is most recent estimate, is $45 billion. We spent on everything from vet services to kibble to grooming to dog walkers, you name it. And 15 years ago, it was $17 billion, so not even half of it. That's a pretty dramatic change.
Oh, yeah.
I guess in my book, I try to get into the question, why did this happen? What does it say about us? And I think, even if for people who don't like pets, you can actually learn a lot about our human society by looking at the way we treat pets. It's kind of like a funhouse mirror for our values, and for values that on the face of them, or changes that on the face of them, wouldn't seem to have anything to do with pets.
I think that's a great analogy, funhouse mirror. I think you're right, with a little sloppy kiss and a tail wag and a purr throttle. But how did you pitch the idea of this concept to a publisher? I mean, obviously, with your credentials as a reporter for one of the best papers in the planet, that was a good asset. That was a plus in your column. And you were sort of a newbie to the world of pets. So tell me how you went about trying to sell this idea to a publisher.
That's a really good question. I sold it as a book about humans, as a book about what the way we treat pets says about us as humans and what the changes in that say about where we are as a society. And I wrote up a proposal, and I had an agent, and there were a couple of these moments with publishers where they were like, well, who the heck are you? and I actually tried to turn that, I don't know if I succeeded, but I tried to turn that into a strength by saying, listen, I'm kind of parachuting into this world, which has people who have dedicated their entire careers to it, and people who write full time about nothing but pets. And I think, because I'm at a little bit of a distance from it, I actually can maybe appreciate some longer term, broader changes that, you might not see if you're there in the middle of the woods. You might not see the shape
right.
of the forest.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
And I said, listen, I'm a reporter, so I'll at least get the facts right, even if I screw up the analysis. And the publisher, I remember, they were very concerned that, the one thing they were worried about, they were like, well, this isn't going to be some sort of attack on pet ownership. Is it? Because I think there's a lot of that out there, and there's sort of a vibe that a lot of books about pets, have to be either an attack or some sort of very heavy, morally fraught thing where you're grappling with issues of life and death. And I said, no, it's not like that at all. It's, first of all, on page one, I'm going to cop to being as guilty as anyone, if there's anything to be guilty of, which I don't think there is. And I'm, like I said, I'm more interested in kind of getting to this question of, what does it say about us that we used to, when we did dog training, we used to do it in one way, and now we do it in another way, and we've changed the method that is most common. And that, I think, actually says something, it says a little bit about what we think about dogs, but it also says something about what we think about family and what we think about how to educate and how to train our children and so on. And you can see that in the way we love pets.
Well, absolutely. You've really done like a furry psychological study. It's almost like a dissertation, but full of delightful things. I'm thinking about, in one of the chapters, each of your chapters, for the people listening in, we're speaking to Michael Schaefer, who wrote the book One Nation Under Dog. Just came out. You got to grab it. It's really going to explain how we have evolved with our pets. And even though it says One Nation Under Dog, don't worry, cats get in there too. He's got a black cat named Amelia. Is that right?
I have a cat named Amelia.
Okay, and you talked about, some other things. But the one thing that I was really impressed, and I think that really describes this book, is at the bottom of page 16 and 17, here you are at this global pet expo, and I believe that's when we first met in San Diego. If you don't mind, I want to just read an excerpt from your book.
Please.
This is what Michael Schaefer thought when he walked into the Global Pet Expo, which is about the equivalent of 11 and a half football fields, 2,400 booths of all things for pets. He found self-cleaning litter boxes, aquariums that could be hung like picture frames, NASCAR-branded pet beds, Snoop Dogg-themed pet hoodies, bird cages shaped like castles, talking food bowls, dog kimonos, leashes that blink, leashes that beep, leashes that glow in the dark. You got dog mineral water, cat mineral water, hamster and guinea pig mineral water, and my favorite was the ferret hammocks.
Yes.
Of course they got to take a, they're so tired and stressed out, they had a long day at work, they got to kind of chill out on the hammock.
It's tough to be a ferret out there, I guess.
What were you thinking when you were walking the booth after booth? Didn't you just feel like, oh my gosh?
Well, you know, I went to a few of these because the first time I went, and you could probably relate to this, I felt completely overwhelmed. And it was this sort of, what in the world is going on here? And I think if I had just stopped there, you could sort of make fun of a lot of the stuff, right? You know, it's a lot of it's pretty goofy, you know, but I went back. I went back a few years in a row, and I went to some of the other pet trade shows. And, you know, I was thinking, by the end of the time, you know, I would be thinking, well, you know, look at how this stuff is, you know, even in the time I was going to those shows, the goods on the floor changed. It changed, you know, the stuff that was popular changed, the form, the marketing, you'd start to see these subtle changes. And you know and I know it's not the dogs and the cats that have changed, it's the humans.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, you saw in pets, you saw the kind of rise of this Paris Hilton era where there were all these strollers and, you know, kind of purses and things like that. And then that stuff sort of declined a little bit. Nowadays you see, you know, we humans are increasingly concerned about the environment, about sort of eating in certain healthy ways. I think there's a lot of skepticism, particularly after the pet food poisoning. There's right. a lot of skepticism of big corporations and, you know, are they doing enough to make sure their products are safe? So you'd see a lot of little independent brands of food, and you'd even see the big corporations, their brands were trying to dress up as if they weren't from a big corporation.
Yeah, they came up with different aliases, don't you think?
Different aliases, or they'd have these bags that, you know, it looked as if someone had just taken humble farmer had just taken a piece of chalk and written the name of the brand on the bag, and it wasn't coming from an enormous multinational. And, that obviously, you know, my dog isn't sitting there thinking about marketing schemes of multinational corporations, but some very smart person out there has realized that I as the customer and you as the customer may be doing just that. And some of the pet marketing people I talk to, I mean, they point to this phenomenon they call humanization. That is, that people who buy goods for their pets are no longer content to just buy for them as animals, but they are going to buy for them as humans, and they're going to use their human sort of values and judgments to figure out what they want to purchase. And it was this kind of aha moment for the marketing industry when they had this data that showed, you know, it's the same person in the house, usually a woman, who is doing the buying for the kids and for the pets. And they are using the same types of analyses to figure out what it is they want to buy. So let's just play to that instinct. And you saw all this gear that then played up owners' responsibilities as if these were their children, which to a lot of owners they are.
Yeah, I think you're right. We're listening to Michael Schaefer. He is the author of a new book called One Nation Under Dog, and we're finding out just who's really calling the shots these days in the United States, us or the pets. We're going to learn a little bit more after we pay for this show by taking this commercial break. So sit and stay. We'll be right back.
Time for a pause. Four furry ones, actually. Sit and stay. All Behave will be right back.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at petplanetmagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet, For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pet Life Radio proudly presents DSPN, the Dog Sports and Performance Network. Get ready to unleash the dog sports enthusiast in all of us. From speed drawing and mushing to racing, agility, and competition, this is the place to learn all about the dog sports and activities that you can do with your furry best friend and canine competitor. So get ready for game time. DSPN with your host, Lori Williams, every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Obehave is back with more tail wagging ways to achieve harmony in the household with your pets. Now back to your fetching host, America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore.
Welcome back to the Obehave Show on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Arden Moore. Michael Schaefer is here. He is the author of One Nation Underdog, and it is a great book that really, really, really spotlights this evolution, if you will, that has occurred within the last decade where we have literally gone gaga over our pets. And to some extent, it's been to reach out to them with new advances in medicine, new advances in nutrition, and also on the other side, maybe Michael, you can help me. We've got a little goofy, don't you think? I guess you actually have some costumes now for your dog Murphy for Halloween. You never thought you'd do that.
Well, we never bought any purpose-made costumes for him.
Oh, come on!
Well, I'll tell you the story. We bought a house. It was a big deal for a young couple. We bought a house, and I remember thinking it's going to be so much fun at Halloween. Kids are going to come to our door and ask for candy. We felt like, you know, it's not been that long since we were the kids knocking on someone else's door asking for candy, so it was sort of a big deal. And Halloween came and went, and no kids showed up at our door. I'm not sure why, but we were really disappointed. And didn't really have anything to do, so we thought, well, hey, we've got all these silly hats that we've gotten when we were traveling and stuff. Why not, just for fun, let's dress Murphy up? And you know,
poor Murphy.
Sure enough, he managed to grin and bear it, or at least bear it. And we made him pose for pictures, and at one point we put him in a beret, like a Frenchman, with like a little red bandana around his neck. And at one point we put him in one of those Turkish hats with the little tassel on the side, and with like an Arab thing around his chest. And my wife is Canadian, and so she put him in a hockey jersey. And, you know, we took these very funny pictures of him, and he looks very content. But the reason, you can't tell if you're looking at the picture, that's because, you know, one of us would be holding the camera and the other one of us would be standing there kind of waving a thing of cream cheese around in the air. So Murphy's eyes would follow the cream cheese. And we wound up with these very funny Halloween pictures of him. But, you know, it was, and I think that the reason for why we were doing it really speaks to a lot of what's going on with people and their pets, which is this, you know, we didn't have children and no children had seen fit to come to our house on Halloween, and we were sort of feeling festive and kind of nurturing and so on, and we thought, well, you know, let's just do something with the dog instead.
Well, now that you have Eleanor, your daughter, and your cat, Amelia, how have you adjusted the family dynamics?
You know, a lot of people had warned us, you know, once you have your child, boy, you're going to start hating that dog. And I got to admit that when you've been up with a crying baby a few times in the night, maybe you're not so eager to roll out of the door at 7:30 to take the dog on a morning walk. But, you know, it is. I think it's just so wonderful to be raising a child with pets. I think it teaches a lot. I think she really loves the pets. And for Murphy, the dog, it's like the greatest relationship in the world because she drops food and he eats food, so everyone's happy. we spend a lot more time picking macaroni and cheese out of his fur than we used to.
He's saving it for later. You know that. He's just saving it. That's his little furry pantry. He's just like, hey, leave it alone. I know where it is. I'll get it later.
But, you know, she likes to. She sort of figured out that she could feed him, too. which I wish she hadn't figured out, because now sometimes she makes a game of it instead of eating her dinner like I want her to. But, you know, it's a great thing. And so I haven't really regretted that. But, you know, it's enough of an issue, as you know, that a lot of people will go to, like, a dog trainer or something to sort of try to work with their dog a little bit before the baby comes, to kind of make the dog understand that, hey, you know, you're not going to be number one around here anymore, and you gotta understand that and not act out. In Murphy's case, that hasn't really been a problem, but it's something that I know a great number of people worry about.
Yeah, I understand that. Now, speaking of dog trainers, you did do a section in the book that sort of looks at the opposing philosophies, if you will. You've got, on one hand, Caesar Milan with his, you know, I am God, dogs, you will follow me, and the benevolent Ian Dunbar, who's into the positive reinforcement, where you're more like a benevolent leader, I guess. What was your take as an outsider and as a journalist looking at this, I guess, line of demarcation when it comes to training our dogs?
It seems to me it's like a pretty good mirror image of the culture wars in politics and in society, where there's one side that says we've lost our way because we don't have enough authority and because people don't respect authority anymore, because dogs aren't following the leader. Dogs think they're the leader and don't know their place, right? And another side that says, actually, you know, we've done a lot of research, and in fact, the best way to teach is to use positive training. Don't kick the dog because he's done something wrong, because dogs are probably not smart enough to figure out why they got kicked. They just know that it hurts and they're sad. But instead, you know, give them a treat when they've done something right, so they'll know to do something right. And, you know, the kind of rhetoric people use, it's kind of like the rhetoric that has divided pieces of our society when talking about education or about culture or values since the 1960s, where there's this, you know, this real divide between people who think it's about not enough obedience and people who think it's about needing to teach and nurture in more realistic ways. The real story, though, it seems to me, is that the number of dog trainers, period, in the whole country has tripled.
Oh, my gosh, I know.
In 2006, it tripled. And the federal government actually has its own number in the Bureau of Labor Statistics for animal trainers, just the same way as it has a number for bus drivers or truck drivers bookstore workers or anything like that. So there has been, you know, regardless of what kind of philosophy you subscribe to, there has been this tremendous growth in the number of trainers. And one of the people I interviewed said to me, you know, it's kind of like sending your kid to driver's ed now in certain neighborhoods. It's just...
Oh, that's a good analogy.
It's the kind of basic responsible thing you do because you want to be a good citizen. Just the same way you don't want your 16-year-old careening around killing people in traffic, you also want to make sure your dog, who you're walking around the neighborhood or letting run at the park, you want to make sure that's the dog that is going to know to come when called and is going to know to not do certain behaviors that might scare people, that sort of thing. And this is, again, it's a really quite a recent phenomenon. Not so long ago, the only time you might have worked with a professional trainer who you had to pay would have been, well, maybe if you wanted to do agility or some of the contests like that, or if you had a particularly problem dog, or if you, you know, had an idea that Fido was going to go to Hollywood and become a stunt dog or something, which for most people it wasn't really the case. And, you know, now it's become this quite normal thing. And again, I think you can kind of look at all these reasons for why. Like, I think nowadays, if you have a dog, you're probably a lot more afraid that if something goes wrong, you're going to get sued. So you think, well, I want to make that not happen. So you think of this as a responsible thing to do. And nowadays, a lot more dogs spend a lot more time alone all day, which, as you know, can cause behavior troubles and whatever. So these things, which, you know, why do they spend more time alone? Is because we work longer hours than we used to, and there's more two-career couples than we used to. So you wouldn't think of, like, you know, the rise of two-career couples or the frequency of lawsuits as having anything to do with your dog and with the way you treat your dog, but they do.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, which is probably why that whole cottage industry of pet taxis and doggy daycares and all these other places have just blossomed.
Right. And, you know, obviously they're really kind of cute and funny when you look at them. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to all be kind of a scholarly, why do these exist sort of thing, because it's an incredibly endearing world to visit, which I spend a lot of time poking around in. But that was the kind of curiosity that got me into this, was that these things that I was doing that people would say, oh, this is ridiculous and over the top and spendthrifty, were actually, for the country we now live in, pretty normal.
Yeah. Now, when you were doing all this, I mean, obviously you didn't win the lotto, so how were you able to kind of support yourself while you were going from San Diego to New York to all parts in between to do research for this book?
I stayed on a lot of sofas.
Okay.
And a lot of bad motels. You know, the way a book works with my publishing house is they give you some of your money up front so that you can then use some of that money to support yourself while you were doing your research. But it's not any kind of lavish lifestyle. So I was really trying to be as careful as I could. And, you know, luckily, one of the wonderful things about this world, about pets, is that compared to, you know, my career as a newspaper reporter, people were always so eager and happy to kind of open up their businesses, open up their lives, tell me all about their dog, their cat, their grooming business. It was a very, very easy form of interaction. If something about pets really brings people together and opens people up.
You did that with Ada in New York with the Chihuahua Nation. I actually did a book signing there, and I was blown away by her.
Yeah, she's amazing. And there are people like Ada around the country. She's a woman who I wrote about who kind of organizes these meetups around New York of people who have Chihuahuas. And they get together, and she'll have, you know, parties around an event like, you know, Thanksgiving or Halloween and with a theme, and they'll rent some space and everyone will get together. And, you know, you go, and you know, New York is a big, tough city. It's hard to meet people. And here are a bunch of people, not rich and fancy people by any stretch of the imagination, who have, through their dogs, found this community and become friends, you know, independently of their dogs, and, you know, realize they have things in common. And when they go through tragedies, they share the tragedies. And it's, you know, it's a really wonderful group of folks who have managed to do what I think a lot of people are trying to do with their dogs, which is to find some social support, not just from the dog, but from other humans. And this is something, I remember being in Austin, Texas. I was visiting a company that makes chew toys. And after I'd been out at their facility all day, I was in just by my motel, and there was a coffee shop bar, a sort of half outdoor next door, and it was summer in Texas, it was warm, and I noticed all these people with their dogs, and it turned out the bar every Wednesday or Thursday night had something called Yappy Hour, which is when people can bring their pets, and you know the bar becomes pet friendly, and they put out some treats and some water bowls and stuff. And, you know, people would come in, have a drink, meet some people. I'm sure the bar was, you know, doing nice business on what would otherwise have been a quiet night of the week. But it wasn't all about that. It was about, you know, sort of another way that people's pets wind up bringing them into community, which is something that I think a lot of people have trouble finding.
Well, hopefully we won't have AA for dogs pretty soon. I hope that doesn't happen, you know.
The dogs weren't doing any drinking. So I don't think there's anything to worry about with that. And in fact, you know, I don't know any stats on this or anything, but I have seen all kinds of stats about how people who have pets are healthier on a broad number of levels, and that the dogs do support people in ways that I think would probably encourage them to make healthier choices in their own lives.
I'm 93, and people think I'm like only 52. So, you know, I feel pretty good. I thank my furry Fab Four for that. So, see, there you go.
I mean, I read at one point about this. In San Francisco, the city health department started a website called Dogs Are Talking. Dogsaretalking.com, and it was about the site was a public health website that aimed at encouraging people to go get themselves tested for syphilis. And you would think, well, gee, what does syphilis have to do with dogs? Well, you know, nothing, except that the argument of the website was that if you get syphilis and you get sick and you are incapacitated, you won't be able to care for your dog.
Good
the
boy.
The logic was this is such a devastating possibility, this idea that your dog, who has done nothing to deserve it, will be left alone and maybe abandoned because of preventable things that you have done with your own behavior or with not getting medical attention and so on. That's such a bad thing that it will help steer people towards making healthier choices.
Bad people. Bad people.
Right. And if you think about that, people who are very depressed, or people who are going through a loss in their lives, feel this awareness that they have an animal who depends on them. That actually, I think, helps people, encourage people to get out of bed in the morning, encourage people to be healthier, to pull themselves together in ways that, I realize you were joking about dog AA, but there's actually a serious point there, which is that this is a bond that I think actually encourages humans to be a little better than they might otherwise be.
I have to agree. We're speaking with Michael Schaefer. He is the author of the book, One Nation Under Dog. It is published by Henry Holt and Company. And I urge all of you to dash out after the show and get a copy of the book. Before we say goodbye, Michael, is there any parting tidbit or piece of advice?
If people make fun of you for what you're doing for your pet, just realize that... For most of the time, there's nothing all that weird about it. To my mind, it's like this. If you spend $3,000 on a flat-screen TV, say, well, people
right.
will say, gee, maybe Arden likes movies, or maybe Arden is really into high-tech.
Or maybe Arden's bouncing a check. I don't know. Maybe
right.
that's what they're
maybe
thinking.
Maybe they'll say that, too. But if you do the same thing, or not
right.
just money, but time, too. But
right.
And if you do the same thing, if you spend $3,000 on a medicine that your pet needs in order to survive, a lot of people are liable to say, well, gee, don't you know how many children in the third world go without any medicine at all? As if you're somehow taking medicine out of their cabinets in order to give it to your dog.
Good point.
And to my mind, it's a choice. We're in a consumer society, for better or for worse. And it's a choice. I don't know that the choice of getting medicine for your dog is going to qualify you to be the next Mother Teresa. But on the list of things that are actually really rotten that we do, we actually ought to maybe feel ashamed about. I don't think caring for our pets is really on that list, nor ought it to be. I think on the list of ways we choose to spend our time and our money and our energy, it's pretty darn good.
I think that's well put. Michael, I really appreciate you being on our show. I wish much success for you in your book. I think it's going to be one of those reference books that people are going to point to saying, yeah, that's what it is. It's like a Hey Mabel. Hey Mabel, did you know that the guy created those Kong toys used to work in a Volkswagen automobile
right.
shop? And I mean, there's a $100,000 dog walker out there, and there's a $6,000 hypoallergenic cat waiting list. I mean, you really found a lot of good things and strange things and oh my gosh stuff that is what our society is all about. And so, times are tough right now, and I don't know about you, but it seems like people are hunkering down a little bit more, and I have a feeling, there is some dents in this armor called the pet industry, but it's pretty resilient when you compare it to the automobile industry and other things, don't you think?
I think a lot of the stuff that people do for pets and spending people do, like really going to the limit on veterinary spending to save the pet's life, or buying food that you think is healthy. People are doing that because they think of their pets as a member of the family. Which,
right.
if you think about it, in historic terms, that's a heck of a promotion. But once you've decided that Fido is a member of your family, and you're going to feed him in a certain way because he deserves to be fed in that way because it's healthy, I think even the most smitten people don't think of Fido as some kind of gourmand, right?
They're thinking, right.
I'm going to get him this organic food or whatever because I think it's the healthy thing for him to do, and that's my responsibility to him as the leader of his family. I think once you've given them that promotion, it's very hard to demote them just because the economy is lousy.
Right.
People, I think, are willing to scrimp and save for themselves and go down to Eating Hamburger Helper themselves before they're going to do something that they perceive as hurting their pet. And that's a different thing for people who, maybe if you just don't have $8,000 to do a life-saving surgery, well, then
mm-hmm.
it's different because you don't have a choice. But for anyone who has a choice, which is still most people, I think they're willing to sacrifice in order to do what they think is the right thing for their pet. And, it's kind of like some of these other things that seem to be doing okay in the economy, like Netflix is doing okay, and apparently,
right.
booze is doing okay.
Booze is doing great.
it's like, all right, I'm not going to be going out to that fancy dinner, but I'm going to stay home, I'm going to have a beer, I'm going to put my dog in my lap, I'm going to watch a movie, and life can be okay that way.
That's right.
Not fancy, but that's how it's going to be. And the pet industry themselves, they're predicting that they're going to continue to grow, not by very much, but by a little bit in the year ahead. So
mm-hmm.
That might not be ideal for them, But compared to the number of industries out there that are actually shrinking, losing business, losing customers, that seems to be okay.
I agree. I want to take this time to again thank our guest, Michael Schaefer, the author of One Nation Under Dog. It is a book out by Henry Holt & Company, and his website is michaelschaefer.net, correct?
That's right, www.michaelschaefer.net.
Okay, we have a spelling challenge for all of you, so make sure you spell it the right way. Michael, thanks for being on the show, and congratulations on your book.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, and at this time, also, I have to thank a big shout-out to Mark Winter, my producer. He makes me hum along on this show each and every week. He's the guy behind the magic curtain. And I want to also at this time for invite all of you to tune in to the different shows on Pet Life Radio. We are growing, and we have everything for the people that like lizards, to cats, to dogs. Oh my. So check out PetLifeRadio.com. And until next time, this is your flea-free host, Arden Moore, delivering just two words to all you 2-, 3-, and 4-leggers out there. Oh, behave.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's Oh, Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. Oh, Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand. This is the place for a special paparazzi treat, only on PetLifeRadio.com.